we are holding on paid days on the Aleph third line. We were discussing yesterday the dinim about going to the bathroom on Shabbos and in particular about wiping. So now continuing on that topic. And what says, Amalei Rav Huna l'Rabba Brei. Rav Huna asked his son Rabba, my time alei shchichas tamei d'Rav Chista. Why are you not regularly going to learn by Rav Chista the Mechabedam Shmaitei where his statements and his teachings in Torah are very sharp? Amalei, so Rabba, the son says, my ezel l'gabei, why should I bother going to him? When I do go to him in the past, when I've gone to him to learn Torah, most of the Mili Alma, instead of teaching me Torah, he's having me sit there and he's teaching me mundane things. The Divrei Chinam Sha'ina Torah, Rashi says, mundane things. For example, he told me, when a person is going to the bathroom, he shouldn't sit down suddenly, because then Rashi explains the anus, the hole there, opens up very fast, and then it can damage the ring over there, the muscles. Rashi calls it shine karkashta, because the Gemara is going to say in a second, the Gemara is going to use an expression in a second that the intestine, the rectum or whatever, rests on three teeth, which is a way of saying that they're not teeth literally, but the muscles over there are shaped somewhat like teeth, and therefore if you sit down quickly, then they open up very quickly, and then can damage them. So you shouldn't sit down suddenly. Also, a person needs to go to the bathroom. They shouldn't strain too much to go for the same reason. Because the karkashta, the end of the intestines, the rectum, sits on three teeth. The muscles over there that surround that area. Are shaped sort of like teeth, so that's what the Gemara is calling them. Duma mishtamta shini de karkashta. So what can happen is if you sit down suddenly and open it suddenly, or if you push and strain very hard, then it can cause those teeth, those muscles, to break off, to come out of place. Prolapse called in medicalese. And then the person can be in a dangerous situation. So you see, Rabbi says, those are the kind of things of Chista is teaching. Why should I bother going and learning by him? Amalei, so his father, Rav Huna, says...
Isn't that Lashon Hara on a Talmid Chacham?
Obviously not, since Rabbi is saying it. Lashon Hara, you know that one thing that's allowed is Lashon Hara is allowed to say Ellis, where it's for a constructive purpose. The Rabbi figured over here that this is for a constructive purpose. His father is telling him to go learn by Rav Chista. He's informing him, you should go. Rav Chista is not teaching Torah. Rav Chista is teaching, at least the last time I was there, is teaching Mili D'Alma, and he gave this example. So therefore, it's not worth it. Amalei, but Rav Chista answers him, who ofik b'chayed b'ryasa b'at amit b'mili D'Alma. Look at that. He's dealing with things that are essential to life, that are telling you about important things, that are important things that are negaya to your life. But after Amit the Mili D'Alma, and you're just dismissing it as divrei chinam, as mundane things, just the opposite. Koshkin zilagabe. All the more so, you should be going to learn Torah by him. And in fact, by the way, we do find the Gemara elsewhere where apparently Rabbi Bar Huna not only went to learn by Rav Chista, but eventually became great enough that he calls Rav Chista his chaver. So apparently he did eventually go to learn Torah by him. But Ben Yoyada has an explanation over here when he says when Rav Huna is saying Kolshkin, what's the Kolshkin? Okay, very nice, fine. You should go to him in order to learn things that are negative to health. But why Kolshkin? And he has a long explanation. The gist of which is that Rav Huna is telling him you should realize that these seemingly mundane things that Rav Chista is teaching about the proper way to go to the bathroom, which, by the way, are valid, and they are actually brought lahalacha in Shulchan Aruch, so they themselves actually do become part of Torah. But besides that, also, Ben Yoyada explains that Rav Chista, in addition, is hinting at deeper ideas with these teaching about the attitude that a person should have towards the things of this world in general, which is compared to going to the bathroom because it's something that you really need. A person works hard. A person works hard on business or whatever, and he explains why that's called beis hakisei. So when a person is doing that, he shouldn't be in such a hurry to jump into that and not strain himself too much, because it goes on. The three teeth represent that the alfor shadvarim olam omed. So therefore, you're gonna ruin those things if you're too much into business and too much trying to earn a living rather than focusing mainly on Torah. Okay. Continues the Gemara. How you the fun of Tzror v'cheder? Suppose a person has in front of him on Shabbos, we're talking about it on Shabbos. So a person has two different things available to wipe with. He has a Tzror, which is a pebble, and he has a cheder, he has a piece of earthenware. Now, we learned yesterday that we said something that Rabbi Yochanan had said, that you're not allowed to use a piece of cheder. And we ended up saying the reason is because there's a problem that somebody may use it for kishuf against you after you used it to wipe with, and somebody may use it for kishuf. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan said you shouldn't use that, and therefore preferably you should be using the pebble. But now the Gemara is revisiting that point. So Rav Huna omer mekaneach b'tzur ve'ein mekaneach b'cheres. Rav Huna says better you should use the stone to wipe with rather than the cheres, because as we said before, the cheres is, we said actually there's two things. There's kishuf, and we also said a piece of cheres has sharp edges and it may cut or rip the skin over there. It may cut those muscles, those shinei karkashta that we just mentioned. So Rav Huna is saying better to use the rock. Rather than the cheres, even though the rock normally would be mukta, and usually you're not allowed to handle mukta on Shabbos, but in this case, since the chachamim allowed it to cover the brias, then better to do that. Whereas Rav Chista says better to use the stone rather than the cheres. So he says that after all, the cheres has the advantage, because it can be considered a keli, because we're talking about a piece of cheres, which, as we're going to have in the next Mishnah soon, it itself is large enough to be considered a makeshift keli. And therefore, that way, at least you're not being over on the issue of mukta by handling a rock. I, the sakana. So he says it's not really such a sakana to use cheres, neither of cutting nor of kishuf. Okay, the Gemara says, Maisley, I have a contradiction. A Braita says, Hari lufon of Tzur v'cheres, v'kaneach v'cheres, v'en v'kaneach v'tzur. A Braita clearly says, like Rav Chista, that better you should use the cheres rather than the rock. The pure to the Rav Huna. Wouldn't that be a contradiction on Rav Huna, who says that you should better use the rock? The answer is, Tirgum, a Rasam, Bapapa, Kamei, the Rav Chista, a Libra, the Rav Huna. The answer is, Rasam, Bapapa explained, while he was in front of Rav Chista as a Talmud, he explains what would Rav Huna answer, what would Rav Huna do with this braisa. But oignei kelim, that the braisa, when it's saying to better use kli cheres, is talking about the rims of kli cheres. Suppose you have a piece of a kli cheres that was broken off, which contains the rim of it. Now the rim, or a different explanation is also it means the handle of a kli cheres is rounded. There's no sharp edges on it. So therefore, that's a better to use, because that doesn't have the problem it doesn't have pointy edges, or at least the side that you're using doesn't have pointy edges. So therefore, it's not going to rip anything. It's also not a problem of kishuf. So then the braisa is saying better to use that. But if you don't have an oignei kli cheres, if you don't have this rounded piece available, all you have is a regular shard of earthenware, which does have sharp edges, then maybe the braisa is not necessarily saying that you should use that, because then you have the problem of sakana and the problem of kishuf. Okay. Another case, hoy v'fod of tzur v'asavim. What if a person has in front of him a rock or grass that he can use to wipe himself with? So again, Rav Chista and Rav Hamnuna argue which one is better to use. Now, what are we talking about over here? Rashi has two explanations. One is that we're not talking about on Shabbos anymore. Here we're talking even on weekdays. And the question is basically, which one is safer to use? Is there a problem with grass that because that grass is blades of grass over there, they may cut. They may also, like you get a paper cut kind of. So it may cause cuts in that area when you're wiping. So you have machlokes, which one is it still acceptable to use those, or better should you be using a ksura. Rashi was the second explanation from the Jebeim that we're talking about on Shabbos, and in that case, we're not talking about grass that's detached from the ground, then for sure there's no problem of using it. The question is whether you can use grass that's still attached to the ground, so like you'll hold some of it in your hand without uprooting it from the ground, and then use it to wipe that area. So would that be allowed or not? Rashi says I don't really like that explanation. How could anybody say that you could be using them while they're attached? You might pull them out from the ground. The halacha is you actually are allowed to use grasses and things that are attached to the ground. There's an issur d'rabbanan to do things like climb up trees on Shabbos, but that's things that might break, as opposed to Rashi over here himself says that things that are attached to the ground, you're allowed to use them. You're just not allowed to pull them out of the ground. It's hard to understand. Rashi says how you'd be allowed to use them for wiping when you might pull them out. Okay. Anyway, so Chad Omer. So between Rav Chista and Rav Amnona, one says the kaneach that serve in kaneach ba'asavim. One says better you should use the stone again, even though they're mukta, rather than using the grass. So again, according to Rashi's first explanation, it's not even a question of mukta. It's a question of which one is safer to use because the grass might cut you, and therefore he's saying better to use the stone. But Chadom, and the other one says mekaneach ba'asav, and mekaneach b'tzur, better to use the grass rather than using the rock. So the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. How can you say that you can use grass? A Braisa says, Hamakaneach bedavar sha'ur she'letes bo'i, if a person wipes with something flammable, shinava tachtonis noshuis, those lower teeth, meaning the muscles, the anal muscles, fall off. So you're not supposed to use something that's flammable in the first place. Grass is flammable. Now, you have the obvious question. We use toilet paper, which is flammable. We'll talk about that in a second. But in any case, so how can, so between Rav Chista and Rav Hamnuna, how can anybody say you should use grass when grass is flammable? The answer is like Tasha, Havalachin, Havayavation. There's a difference whether it's fresh grass or whether it's dry. If it's fresh grass, then it's not flammable. So therefore that would be allowed, as opposed to if it's dry grass. So if it's dry grass, then you have a problem. Again, according to Rashi's first explanation, because the sharp edges of it might cut you, and according to the second explanation, because if it's still attached to the ground, then you have the problem that he may pull it out of the ground on Shabbos. Now, of course, nowadays we use toilet paper, which is flammable, and it's not a new thing. Already the Ramah mentions using paper. So there's a couple of things. Earlier than the Ramah, actually, the Ramah brings from the Aguda, which is from one of the later Rishonim, that the difference is, in those times, as we were learning yesterday, where do they go to the bathroom? Out in the fields. So there you have a problem with it. Whereas nowadays, or even in the times of the Rishonim, when bathrooms were indoors, okay, they didn't have plumbing like we do, but they had outhouses, which are in a building, then there's no issue with it. So one explanation of that is that the point is, it's not that there's a natural danger in using something that's flammable. What it is the danger is, as we said before, with the earthenware, that somebody might take it and use it for kishuf against you. Well, if the bathrooms are indoors and there's no problem, nobody's going to be able to find that and do kishuf with it. Another explanation is just said it's one of these things called Shrema Psoyim Hashem. There's a concept that when you have something that's common to do, even though objectively it might be a little bit dangerous, but we say Hashem protects the simple, Hashem protects the people who just go about their affairs in a normal way. And since the common thing is in later times and nowadays, you use toilet paper, so there and nobody is even aware of there being any sakana in it, then therefore it ceases to be a sakana. Which, by the way, might be negeya in other areas of this concept of frame of Shem Hashem is negeya in other areas as well. It's the reason why there are certain things, which even though certain kinds of activities and whatever, even though there might be a certain small degree of risk in them, driving would be one example. You're still allowed to do them. Shem of Shem Hashem applies to that and to a number of other things. It summarizes it in Shulchan Aruch, the expression "Pukhazi my amadvar." Go see what people do when the fact is, you see that people use paper, so obviously there's no problem with it. Worth talking about it here in this connection, as far as tearing toilet paper on Shabbos. Now there is an issue with tearing toilet paper on Shabbos because you have a couple of issues. There's a malacha of kereya, of ripping. Now, ripping is only a malacha if you're doing it for a constructive purpose. But here you are. You're using it to get, you're ripping in order to get a usable piece of toilet paper. That's kind of making a kalim. So therefore, there could be a problem with that. And if, in addition, you tear the toilet paper along the perforation, then you have an additional problem that would be the malacha of machasich, where you're cutting it to size. So this is why the minhag Yisrael is that either you tear toilet paper before Shabbos, or you use tissues. Okay, plumbers don't necessarily like the idea of you using tissues. They say it may stuff up the pipes. I don't know. I use them all the time. I've never had a problem, but whatever. A person who's concerned about that should be ripping toilet paper before Shabbos. If you didn't, then there's no tissues available. For example, in Shemitah Shabbos Kilchasa, it starts by saying in that case you wouldn't be allowed to rip it at all. Not on the lines. You would have to use something else. So he gives an example over there. You could use, let's say, writing paper. Now, obviously, you're not going to flush that. That's for sure. You're going to clog the pipes, so you would have to throw it away afterwards. Just throw it away in the garbage. He says, if there's no alternative, there's nothing else available, then okay, covered up brius, then you might be allowed to tear off paper from the roll with a shinui. A shinui would mean, for example, you hold down one end of it with your elbow and you rip a piece off with your other elbow and try not to do it on the perforation. But in order to avoid those kind of problems is why you tear toilet paper before Shabbos. It's brought by the way about some Rebbe, I don't remember now who, that he Nisselnacht, when you're not allowed to learn Torah that night anyway, he would keep himself busy that night carrying the supply of toilet paper that he'd need for Shabbos, for Shabbos and for Yom Tov for the entire year.
How could it be a mekanech ba'asavim if they were attached? How is he going to watch? How's he going to clean himself? They're attached to the ground.
Well, so what you do is you take them while they're attached to the ground and rub them over that area. You can hold on. You know, you hold on to the grass further down, closer to the ground, and you use it as if it was toilet paper. We're talking about, I guess, grass that's long enough for the purpose. You know, we're not talking about somebody's front lawn that's just mowed. You know. I don't know. I've never tried doing it myself, but I guess there is a possible way to do it. Going back to the Gemara, Hanitzrich lifnes ve'enin lifnes. Suppose a person needs to go to the bathroom and he doesn't go to the bathroom. What's going to happen to him? The Torah Sefach brings a girsa from the Rif. Hanitzrich lifnes ve'ochal. If he needs to go to the bathroom and instead he actually eats some more. So what happens to him? Rav Chista ve'Ravina. So Rav Chista and Ravina argue. What's going to happen? Chad Omer Ruach Ra Shabbat Espoi. One says he's going to end up having bad breath because Rashi describes it like the waste ends up rotting away in his stomach, and then it ends up causing bad breath. The Chad Omer Ruach Zur Ma Shabbat Espoi. The other one says that a spirit or a Ruach Ra meant a bad spirit or a bad wind. So it meant, Rashi says, bad breath. Ruach zuah means a smelly wind. Meaning, Rashi says, his sweat ends up smelling bad, and therefore he has not just bad breath, but body odor. Tanya Commander Omar Ruach Zoma Shabbatis, right? We learn a Brisa according to the second possibility, that it means that he's going to have body odor because his sweat is going to smell bad. But Tanya is, in fact, we learn a Brisa. And Nitzrach when the cover body, so if somebody needs to go to the bathroom and he eats at that time, Doima Latano, she's Kuwa Gamev, right? It's like firing up an oven when you still have the coals left in, well, not coals, the ashes left in the oven from before. This is the beginning of body of this is the beginning of body odor. We actually learned this earlier in the third paragraph in a different context. But yes, so therefore we see that doing that kind of thing leads to ruach zuama, leads to body odor. Okay. Another case, the ene yochol liponis. What if a person needs to go to the bathroom and he can't? He's constipated. So Rav Chisda says what you should do is stand up and sit down and stand up and sit down, and that'll help. That'll help the muscles. That'll help the muscles start working and be able to bring it down, and he'll be able to go. Rav Chanan min Hadar says you should move to a side. In other words, you tried in one place, it didn't work, so you get up and walk away to a different side and try again there. And again, the walking may help stimulate things. Rav Hamnuna Omer Yimashmish Mitzur Ba'Utamakim. Rav Hamnuna says you take a rock or a pebble and you rub it in that area by the anus to stimulate the muscles. We talked about that yesterday, whether you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. We said you are allowed to do it on Shabbos, but you have to do it with a shinui. You have to do it to la'achayad, for example, just by holding it with your index finger and middle finger rather than your thumb and your index finger, so that you remember not to pull out hairs on Shabbos. Rabbanan Amri Yasiach Daite, and the Rabbanan say a fourth possibility, he should distract himself. So what do you mean? What do you mean distract himself? Amalei Rav Acha, Breder Rav Acha, Breder Rav Acha, Rav Ashi, Koshikin, Ki Masach Daite, Le Masin. All the more so if he distracts himself, if he gets involved in something else, for sure he's not going to be able to go to the bathroom because then he's going to be busy with something else. Said Rav Ashi says, you're right. What we mean is yasiach daitim et varim acherim. What the Rabbanan meant is he should distract himself from anything else and focus on going to the bathroom, and that will help. So, of one of these things, we said the Rav Chisda's thing was that he should stand up and sit down many times. So, Amr of Yirmiyah B'Dikti, L'didi Chazi Li'ahu Tayar, I once saw a certain Arab, the Kambi Yosef, he did that. He had to go to the bathroom. He wasn't able to. So he stood up and sat down. And it worked ad the shofa chesera until it came pouring out of him like a pot, like as easily as you empty a pot. So you see that it worked. And again, all these things, by the way, are brought in Shulchan Aruch. You have in Simon Gimel and Orach Chaim is about the dinim of going to the bathroom. The dinim, it includes dinim, for example, that we learned about in Brach, that's about what direction you're allowed to go to the bathroom relative to the Beit Mikdash or relative to East and West. It includes these dinim that we're talking about over here about that you shouldn't sit down quickly and so forth. And you have the dinim about what you should and shouldn't wipe with. And it includes also these things about if you can't go to the bathroom, what do you do in order to stimulate yourself? Then, by the way, you have a different simon in Shulchan Aruch, or Chaim Simon Shin Yud Beis, that deals with the dinim of the bathroom on Shabbos, which includes everything that we had in this sugya over here, plus a couple of other things.
Did we learn a lot of in brachas also?
We did. In fact, the next braisa that we're going to quote now is in brachas as well. Turn it up, Bonan.
Which way to face? Yeah.
What?
Oh, remember, we're learning which way to face,
which way to face, we're not talking about over here. Which way to face, that was actually in the last parak of brachas. We're not talking about that over here. Here we're focusing on the health aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, we had this in brachas as well. The next, because we had a Gemara in brachas over there that discussed the point that if a person needs to go to the bathroom, they're not allowed to daven until they do. So we had some of these dinim in that connection. We also had the dinim over there about where relative to a bathroom and where relative to tzoya you're allowed to daven. Yes. So this next thing we also had over there, turn it up on it, hanichas usudas keva. If a person is going in to sit by a meal that's going to last a while. So it would be a gnai for him to have to get up in the middle of the meal and go to the bathroom. So therefore, he should make sure before he sits down that he's not going to have to throughout the meal. So what should he do? He should walk 10 times 4 amos each. The amula arba pamim es shall esther es amos. A different version is that he should walk 4 times 10 amos each. So Rashi says that second version says it's better that way because the longer you walk, the more likely it is to stimulate the muscles and bring down the zevel to the rectum over there, so it'll come right out. So therefore, so that second version says that walking 4 times of each time you're walking 10 amos is more effective. Anyway, once you do that, the nifne, then you go to the bathroom, and then the nifne yeshubim kaima, and then you go in and sit down in your place at the meal. Because then you can be sure, then you've taken care of, then you've taken care of business, and you can expect that you're not going to have to go during the meal. Getting back to, so now the Mishnah, getting back to things that that if a person carries them on Shabbos, what's the shear for him to be chayev? So the Mishnah says, cheres, if a person carries a piece of earthenware on Shabbos, the amount that he's chayev is, could they listen, then sim l'chaveire divir Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says it would be the amount that you put between one sim and the next one. What is a sim? So Rashi explains when you have, let's say, for example, you have a bunch of boards or beams that are sitting on the ground, that are piled up one on top of the other on the ground. Now the problem is not every one is exactly the same size. So the problem is if one of them is hanging over the other one, if you have an empty space between the beams over there, because one of them is longer than another, then that one is going to end up warping. So therefore, what you do is you put something underneath it. You put in a piece of cheres over there, for example, to hold up the top one, to fill in the space in order that it doesn't get warped. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying that piece of earthenware that size is significant enough to be that a person is chayev for carrying it on Shabbos. There's a few other explanations what sim means. Rashi himself in some other places explains that it means, for example, you're putting up beams of wood for window frames or door frames or whatever, and sometimes you put in a piece of earthenware in order to fill up a space where you would otherwise have one, like you have now. Nowadays also builders do something similar. If they're putting up a door frame, let's say, and there's too much space between the frame and the wall around it, and therefore they won't use earthenware nowadays. They'll use little wooden wedges called shims. But you have a similar idea of using something like that to fill in the space. And the Rambam explains that it means when you're building a wall using half bricks, then you put in pieces of earthenware to fill up the space between one row of bricks and the next. Whatever, that's what Rabbi Yehuda is saying, that that's the amount that a person is chayev for carrying earthenware on Shabbos. Rav Meir Omer Kedei Lach Despair Sa'ur. Rav Meir says, It would actually be an amount smaller than what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. The amount where it's large enough to pick up some fire with it, like you have to pick up a burning coal with it. So that's considered important enough to be chayav for Shabbos. Rabbi Yosi Omer Kedei L'Tavol B'Revius. Rabbi Yosi says that if it's large enough in order to hold a revius of water in it. We'll see if the Gemara is going to discuss the question between Rav Meir and Rav Yosi, which one has the smaller shear. For sure, though, both of those are smaller than Rav Yehuda's shear, says the Meir. Okay. Amar Rav Meir, Af Al Pi Shein Raya L'Davar. So Rav Meir says, I'll tell you, even though there's no complete raya to what I'm saying, that a piece of earthenware is big enough to hold to hold coals in it, to pick up live coals from a fire and carry them to another place, even though there's no actual proof from a pasuk that such a piece of earthenware is big enough to be considered chashuv, zeicha l'davar. There's a zeicha case, there's like a remembrance of it in a pasuk, because there's a hint to it in a pasuk, because you have a pasuk, shenem, you have a pasuk like this, you have a pasuk in Yeshaya. The context is of it is Yeshaya is criticizing the Jewish people of his times, that they're relying on Mitzrayim for help. We know there was a problem in many times in Jewish history when the Jewish people are later in the time of the first Mitzrayim. In particular, you had various times when the Jewish people are being threatened by one or another power from the north of Eretz Yisrael, first Asher, then Babel, and you had the kings and the people over there were at various times would rely on, okay, we have an alliance with Mitzrayim, and they're going to help us. And the Nevi'im are always criticizing them and saying the Mitzrayim are worthless in that regard, and they're not going to end up helping you. So Yeshaya gives them a muscle over there, like you imagine you're behind a solid wall that's going to protect you, but that wall is going to fall down and then shatter into tiny little pieces. And the pasuk says, "V'lo yimaseh b'mchitasei," there will not be found among the breakage of it. You won't even be able to find a piece of earthenware lachdes eish miyakud that's large enough to pick up fire from a burning. So you see, therefore, Meir says it's not an actual raya, but it shows that it hints to the idea that a piece of cheres of that side does have a certain significance. Amalei Rav Yosi said, Rav Yosi says to him, Mishum Raya, you're bringing a proof from there to say that shows that a piece that size is considered important enough. The same pasuk finishes off. The lachdes mayim migeren. The same pasuk finishes off, or to draw water. From lachdes, Rashi explains, means to draw water from a pit. So you see that Abinah, the pasuk itself is also mentioning drawing water, which is what I'm saying, that a piece of cheres that's big enough to hold a revius is the size that's significant as far as Hilchos Shabbos. Actually, Rav Yaakov Emden explains very interestingly, and he has a Pirush on Mishnah, it's called Lecha Mishnah. The Rav Yaakov Emden was a very, very prolific author. He wrote like dozens or even hundreds of Tzvarim. So one of them is a Pirush on Mishnah, it's called Lecha Mishnah. So he says that basically it's only a zecher because maybe the pasuk is saying, because after all, maybe the pasuk is saying that there's not even going to be something left that's significant enough to, in other words, forget. Maybe the pasuk is saying that a piece that size to pick up coals or to pick up water is not significant enough. So it's only a zecher. And Rav Yosi tells him just the opposite. The fact that the pasuk mentioned two things, to pick up coals or to pick up water, shows that one of them is meant to be significant and the other one not. So therefore, you have to actually, from that pasuk, you could bring a raya for your thing, whereas I would understand the pasuk differently and say that only the second one is something that's considered significant. Okay. So Gemara, she ordered the Rav Meir nafish or she ordered the Rav Yosi nafish? Which shear is larger? Rav Meir's shear about picking up coals with it, or Rav Yosi about picking up a revius of water with it? So Gemara says, Mistabra, now logic would teach us she ordered the Rav Yosi nafish. Logic would tell us that Rav Yosi's shear is larger, because after all, you can use, to pick up a coal, you don't need a very large piece of earthenware, because you only need a very small piece, and you can hold a coal on it, as opposed to a revius of water, you need a larger piece of earthenware. The logic would dictate Rav Yosi's shear is larger. But on the other hand, based on the pasuk, it sounds like Rav Meir, the pasuk that we're mentioning in the Mishnah, that we're using as a zecher, it sounds like Rav Yosi's shear is larger. It sounds like Rav Meir's shear is larger. Because what is the pasuk saying? There's not going to be left a piece. The fact is, both Rav Meir and Rav Yosi know what the pasuk is saying. Rav Meir brings the first part of the pasuk. Rav Yosi brings the last few words of the pasuk. But they both have the same pasuk in front of them. So if the navi is saying over here what's going to happen, that this metaphorical wall that you think is going to protect yourselves is going to shatter into such tiny pieces, then we have to say, if Rav Yosi's shear, which is to collect water in it, is larger, what do you mean? Life of the mana zutra of 100 life of the mana rabba. So what is Yeshaya doing? First he's cursing and then saying that this wall is going to shatter into smaller pieces, and then he said that there's not even going to be a small piece, and then he's going to say there's not even going to be left a big piece. It doesn't work that way. You would say the other way around. There's not going to even be a big piece and not even a smaller piece. So therefore, logically, it would mean the Pasuk is saying that lachis eshi yakud, something that's needed to pick up fire, is larger than the size it takes to collect the reviews. So the Pasuk would be saying there's not going to be left of this metaphorical wall that you think is going to protect you, not even a piece big enough to pick up fire, and not even less than that, not even the amount that it would take to collect the reviews of water. So the way the Pasuk is phrased makes it sound like that, like the size to pick up fire is bigger than the size for a Revius. But on the other hand, logic would dictate the other way around. A tiny piece is enough to pick up a coal. All you need is something that that the coal won't be touching your skin, which would be a much smaller size than a Revius. So which is it? So the answer is, Amar Abaye Masnikinami Lachdis Eish Mikitav Dola. The answer is, Abaye says, you're assuming that a mayor is talking about a piece of earthenware that's enough to hold one coal. No, that's not what it means. It means to take fire from a large bonfire. So in other words, to take fire from a large bonfire. If you have a large bonfire, you have a large fire, you're going to need a larger piece of earthenware because you can't just take one coal out of that. You're going to get too close to the fire with a small piece of earthenware, and then you're going to get burned. So you're going to need a larger piece. So that's what it means. In other words, and in fact, the Pasuk, when the Pasuk says, Lachdis Eishmi Yakud, that's what it means. It doesn't mean a small fire where it's easy enough to get one coal out of it with a tiny piece of earthenware. And also the word Lachdis, the word Lachdis, which means to shovel out, also suggests that we're talking about a large fire over here. You're shoveling out coals from it. So therefore, you would need a larger piece of earthenware. So it comes up, in other words, Rabbi Yehuda's shear. I said before that Rabbi Yehuda's shear is the largest. So actually, the Meiri says that, but actually the Sfas Emes learns the other way around. He says, we learned before, Rabbi Yehuda always has the smallest shearim, so his would actually be the smallest. And then the Gemara is discussing over here Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, and we're saying Lamaskana, what we're saying is Rabbi Meir is larger than Rabbi Yossi's, because we're talking about to pick up fire out of a large bonfire, you would need a larger piece of cheres than you would need to collect the reviyas of your own. Okay. The Mishnah said, Rabbi Yossi, I'm a Misham Raya. So Rabbi Yossi says, you're bringing a proof from that pasuk where it mentions collecting, where it mentions picking up fire with the cheres. The same pasuk finishes as v'lachdis mayim migeva, to pick up water. Pick up water from the from a pit. So the Gemara says, "Shapa kama the Rabbi Yosi the Rabbeir." Okay, so Rabbi Yosi is saying something very good. It's true. The pasuk mentions drawing water. So obviously that shows that a piece of cheres large enough to draw water in is significant enough. So what is Rabbeir doing with that? The answer is, but Rabbeir loy mi boy kama. Rabbeir would say the pasuk is saying a needless to say. Needless to say that from this wall that we're talking about, there won't be left even a piece that's significant enough for people to keep. For example, you won't find such a piece. So you won't even find a piece which is significant enough for people to save, such as a piece that's large enough to collect fire with. Rameyer is saying, what the Pasuk is saying is even a piece that's not significant enough for people to save will not be, you won't find over there, because the thing will be completely shattered into tiny bits. So in other words, he's saying just the opposite. Rav Yossi, you're saying from that Pasuk, that the Pasuk mentions the lachdis mayim migeva, implying that that's a significant use, something that a person would keep a piece of cheres for. Just the opposite. The Pasuk is saying there won't even be a piece like that which is worthless for anybody to keep, because all you can do with it is collect a reviyas of water. You can't even use it for collecting fire, which we just said is a larger amount, and that's what the Pasuk is saying. Whereas Rav Yossi would say the other way around. The Pasuk is saying that there won't be a larger piece that you can collect that you can use to collect fire. There won't even be a smaller piece which is still significant, namely to collect water. All there'll be left is pieces smaller than that are not usable for anything. We're going to start the ninth perek now. Now, this ninth perek doesn't seem to have anything to do Well, so what it is like, it's the end of the Perek. We're gonna be going through first the first seven blocks of our Perek, from Daf Pei Beis to Daf Pei Tes. We're going to be talking about things that don't seem to have to do directly with anything we were talking about before. At the bottom of Pei Tes Amud Beis, we're going to get back to a Mishnah that's going to continue on the topic of these things when a person is carrying such and such, how much is he chayav for carrying on Shabbos. But the first few Mishnayos of our Perek and the Gemara about them are going to be talking about other topics. First, we're going to be talking about the Tumah of Avodah Zarah, and then we're going to go on to several other topics. Now, what is this doing in here? So Rashi explains, all of the Mishnayos in this series are all going to be in the form that Minayin, how do we know such and such a din, and we're going to bring a Pasuk. Where in each case, the Pasuk is going to be more in the nature of an Asmachta, not that we're necessarily actually learning the din from the Pasuk, but rather that we're using the Pasuk as an Asmachta for a certain din. So we're going to have five or six Mishnayos in our Perek that are in that form. So Rashi explains, one of those Mishnayos further on is going to be, how do we know that if you do a bris for a baby 3 days, if you do a bris for a baby on Shabbos, how do we know that you're allowed to wash the area of the bris milah afterwards, because otherwise the baby is going to be in danger? Yeah, it is on the third day, actually. If you do a bris milah on Thursday, let's say, you're going to have a Mishnah on Pei Vav Amud Aleph. So let's say you did a bris milah on Thursday, and on the third day after the bris milah is considered to be a dangerous time. So how do we know you're allowed to bathe the milah, the baby as a whole, or just the bris milah? We're going to talk about it when we get to that. So how do we know you're allowed to do that? And the Mishnah brings a positive. So that has to do with Hilchos Shabbos. So therefore, because of that, therefore the Mishnah is bringing in all these other ones that are formulated in the same way. Minai in this, because it says such and such a positive. Tosfos says, first, what are you talking about? First of all, that one should be first on the list instead of being one of the last ones. If you're bringing in all of them because of that, then that one should be first, and then all the other ones would follow. That's usually how it is when Mishnayos do that. When you have a series of Mishnayos that all are formulated using the same kind of Lashon, which they did, because Mishnayos were Baal Peh, and yeah, it was easier to remember them that way. It always goes, they first have the one that's relevant to the topic of the Perek or the topic of the Masechta, and then they go on to other ones that are less relevant. In Megillah, for example, you have in the first Perek of Megillah, you have the mentions of it, Ein Bein, Oder Rishon, La'ad Sheni, that there's no difference between Purim Katan and Purim Gadol, except for Kriyas of Megillah, Matanis of Yonim, and then it goes on with a half dozen other, with a bunch of other things where you have Ein Bein, this and that, except for one thing. But you start off with the one that's relevant first. So why over here would we be ending with that one, Tosfos says. And anyway, that whole topic of bathing the baby or bathing the milah after the bris milah, 3 days after it, that belongs in the 19th Perek of Amasechta, which is where we're going to be talking about the dinim of bris milah on Shabbos. So what's going on over here? But Tosfos says there's a different reason. We just had the Mishnah at the end of the previous Perek that quoted a pasuk to establish a din. Well, not to establish, but we said as a zecho to a din. Also, like an asnachta, where the mayor and the yeshiva are saying you have this pasuk about the shattering of the wall into tiny pieces, where we see a zecho from that about the size of pieces of earthenware that are considered important. So therefore, our Mishnah is going to be quoting a pasuk that is also similar, where you have a similar kind of thing. We're quoting a pasuk as a zecher, as an asmachta for a din. And in fact, this pasuk that we're going to quote in our Mishnah is only a few pasukim after the previous one. It's in the same perek of Yeshaya. It's a continuation of that nevuah. And therefore, that belongs over here. And then once we have that, then it brings all the other ones. Rabbi Yaakov Emden, again, in Lechem Shemayim, gives a third explanation. He says that the verse is, the amount of Avodah Zarah that's Matameh, the amount of a broken piece of Avodah Zarah or something, the amount of it that's Matameh a person. So what happens is, therefore, now, so he says, the amount that a person would be chayav for carrying the Benam on Shabbos is equal to the amount that's Matameh. Therefore, it actually belongs over here. We're mentioning the shiur of things that a person is chayav for carrying on Shabbos. Okay, so one of them is a person carries Avodah Zarah on Shabbos. How much would he have to be carrying in order to be chayav for carrying on Shabbos? Okay. So three different explanations why this comes over here. So starting off, Amar Rabbi Akiva, minayim la'avodah zarah shemekama b'masa k'nida. How do we know that avodah zarah is mekama a person who carries it, like a nida, where if a person carries a nida or carries any of their, or carries any of their saliva or whatever, then he becomes something. Shenema, you have a pasuk. Again, it's a pasuk from Yeshaya. It's a few psukim after the pasuk that we quoted, lo yimasid imchitase. The pasuk says, tizrein k'moy dava. You should throw them away. You keep them far away from yourself, like a dava. Tizrein k'moy dava. Dava is another word for a nida. Say toimalei. Tell it to go out. And the pasuk is talking about getting rid of avodah zarah. In fact, in the Meiri brings from a medrash that the previous pasuk also, the v'lo yimasid imchitase, which we were saying, is talking about how the Jewish people are trusting in the power of Mitzrayim, and the Navi is telling them it's not going to work. The Meiri brings from a medrash that pasuk is also, when it talks about it being shattered completely, is also talking about avodah zarah. So it really does have a connection. Anyway, so Rav Akiva says, the fact that the pasuk compares avodah zarah to a dava, which means a nida, ma nida matama b'masa, just like a nida is matama a person who carries her, avodah zarah matama b'masa, the same thing, avodah zarah is matama a person who carries it. Now we're going to see, that's the opinion of Rav Akiva, we're going to see the Chachamim disagree with that, and now we're going to have a sugya that goes here, that from here to almost to the end of Pei Gimel Amud Beis, that's going to go into the ins and outs of this. What are the details about the din of avodah zarah being matama? So more sorts of Tanan Hossam. We learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Avodah Zarah. Misha hoya beisai samoch la'avodah zarah. If a person's house, or actually his wall, was next to Avodah Zarah. So suppose you have, there was a common wall, or not, suppose there was a common wall that was being used as a wall of his house, and was also being used as a wall of a house of Avodah Zarah. Whether we're talking about over here, there's a bit of discussion whether we're talking about over here the house itself is actually being worshipped, or whether we're talking about that the house is just being used as a place of avodah zarah. In fact, in avodah zarah, Rashi doesn't explain over here, but in Masechta avodah zarah, Rashi says we're talking about the house itself is being worshipped as an avodah zarah. So now you have a common wall between the yid's house and the avodah zarah. So the nafal, if that wall falls down, you can't rebuild it the way it was, because then you're making things good for avodah zarah, because then now you have the house of avodah zarah is going to be able to continue being used and worshipped. So what do you do? Kesed yaseh. So what should you do? You want to rebuild the wall of your house. Kodesh v'seh shaloi av amos. You have to rebate the wall four amos into your property. So you build the new wall four amos away from where the old one was. And then you rebuild the wall over there. So in other words, your house is going to be four amos smaller than it was. Now, the Gemara explains in Avodah Zarah that what you do is then you take that space of four amos, and you fill it up. You make it into a bathroom area, or you fill it up with thorns or whatever you make it. It's a space that's not going to be able to be used for that way the goyim are not going to use it as an extension of their church or whatever. But you have the new wall of your house is four amos away. Continues the Mishnah. So that part is not really relevant over here. We're going to focus more on the next part. Hoya shaloi v'shala avodah zarah. Now, what happens if the wall belonged in common to the yid and the avodah zarah? The first case of the Mishnah, in other words, we're talking about that, let's say you had a house already built, and then one day the goyim came and used the outside wall of your house and used it to build three more, and then built three more walls next to it, and now they have a base of a desara. So it comes out the wall actually belonged to you completely, but they used it as part of the wall of their house. Now we're talking about that to begin with, the wall was built. To begin with, the wall was built half belonging to the Jew and half belonging to the goy. So the Meiri explains that, let's say, now how would that be allowed? So he says, let's say the goy was building his house. He didn't originally intend it as a building of avodah zarah. Later on, he decided to make it an avodah zarah building. So now the din is, the Mishnah says, nidon mechta al mechta. That area where the wall was counts half and half. Meaning, in other words, so if you have to move four amos away, if you have to move four amos away and rebuild your wall, like we said in the first part of the Mishnah, then the space where that wall was, half of the space where that wall was, counts as part of the four amos. So let's say the wall was two amos thick and now it collapsed. So So one amma of the space belongs to you. One amma belongs to the guy. But now you only have to move three ammas in because you already have one amma that the wall itself took up. So therefore it counts as mechzal mechzal. A bunch of other rishonim actually learn differently. They say that nidin mechzal mechzal means that the material of the wall itself, the material of the wall itself, so the collapsed wall, half and half is half and half. Half of it is mutter, half of it is mutter b'hana, and half of it is osur. So in particular, if the yid can recognize that certain stones of it, let's say he recognizes that certain stones were on my side and I recognize them, then he's allowed to keep them. But avana ve'esa b'afara, but all the stones and the wood and the dirt of that wall, metamim k'sheret, are metamim a person who touches them like a sheret. Now a sheret is a sheret is not like a nida. A sheret is only metamim b'maga, not b'masa. So we see so far that this Mishnah is disagreeing with our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva is saying that Avodah Zarah is metamah like a nida. This Mishnah is saying it's metamah like a sheret. Now what you actually have over here is, even though again the wall was actually half his and half belonging to the guy, but all of the stones are metamah. Because after all, the whole concept in halacha called ein breira, that when you have something like that, with a mixture of things, and you're not sure which is which, we don't say that you're going to pick out half of it, and it's going to be considered that retroactively that was the half all along that belonged to you. We're not going to say that. We're going to say ein breira, and therefore any part of the wall, if there's an actual piece that you recognize belonged to you, then fine, that part maybe is not metame, but the rest of it, where you're not sure which one, you're not sure which one is which. So all of them are going to be metame. Now, usually we say things that are banan, there is breira, but over here, there's an Isser D'oraita of having hana from Avodah Zarah. The tumah true is only midrabanan. The tumah of it is only midrabanan. But therefore, as the Shonim explains, that therefore what we're going to say is that since the Isser is D'oraita, we're going to apply the tumah as if it was a D'oraita thing and say ein breira.
Either way, if you're rebuilding the wall, you're going to be carrying the stuff. You're going to get tummy anyhow.
You'll become tummy, right? Well, that's true, right? Well, when you're clearing away the material, right?
It
also depends where it fell, right? I mean, it didn't necessarily have to fall on your side. If it fell into the guy's side, then he's the one who's going to be carrying it all away, you know? But yeah, it's true. You go to collect
it. But there's a sharing responsibility. If part of it belongs to the yid, you can say, oh, well, from your side, you take care of it. It was our problem, and both, so we're both responsible to make sure that it's all taken care of, you know.
I guess that's true, yeah. Okay, so fine, so the yid will become tummy. But you should realize that handling these is going to become tummy. So again, according to Rashi, all of them are tummy. According to all the other Rishonim, the Rambam, for example, when the Rambam writes his din, he says that half of his is mutar b'hana, and half of it is also b'hana. So Rapashis, then he would say that it sounds like he would also say that only half of it is matame, because again tumas avodah zarah it's only dirabanan, and therefore we would say yesh breira. Incidentally, the Chassam Sofer over here mentions an interesting point in connection to this, that we're saying that tumas avodah zarah is dirabanan. The Chassam Sofer explains that this pasuk that we quoted in the Mishnah, Tizrim Kamodava, he says it's actually Yeshaya was part of the base din that declared the tumas avodah zarah. The concept of tumas avodah zarah that Rambam described is actually dirabanan. You have a remez for it in a pasuk in the Torah, but it's not actually considered a din d'oraita. It's considered a din dirabanan. So the Chassam Sofer learns based on this pasuk, based on other pasukim, based on other gemaras, that Yeshaya was actually part of the base din in the times of Chizkiyahu, who made this zera of tumas avodah zarah, and therefore Yeshaya wrote this pasuk Tizrin Kamardava to actually teach us the din which he and his base din had declared the fact of this concept of tumas avodah zarah. So the Mishnah again says of an error that's matama like a sheriff. Shenema shakis to shaksenu. Remember, because the pasuk says about a zara, you should consider it disgusting. shakes is Meloshin, like you have, it says about Shrotim, I'll to shak you with Nafshit Bechem. So therefore, so we see therefore that there's a connection between Avodah Zarah and Asherah. So it's Matame if you touch it, but not if you carry it.
What about the fact that the Avodah Zarah is broken into pieces? Does it mean anything?
Well, so if you're talking about an actual statue that was broken, then maybe, because then if the goy is mavapalus, then fine. But here we're talking about it's a house. So one explanation actually is that if we're talking about a house over here, a house is anyway meant, it's made up of pieces, and it's meant to eventually be taken apart into pieces, and therefore pieces of it can become tame as well. But yeah, you could also have, even if it was broken, if the goy wasn't mavapalus. If the goy wasn't mavapalus, then it's still matame. Okay. So, yeah. Rabbi Akiva Omer Kenida. Rabbi Akiva says, no, it's matame on a stronger level, like a nida, meaning that it's going to be matame even a person who carries it without touching it. Shenema, because the Apostle says, as recorded in the Mishnah, Tizrem Kamoi Daba, you're going to throw them away, you're going to distance them from yourself like a dover, like a nidah. And therefore, the comparison is ma nidah matama v'masa. So as it said in the Mishnah, just like a nidah is matame a person who carries her, apa v'dizorah matama v'masa, so v'dizorah is also matame if you carry it. Okay, so Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim are arguing what the degree of tumah is of v'dizorah. So now we're going to analyze that machlokes, but first, Omer Rabba says like this, when the pasuk says, Tizrim, the Omer Kla, what is the meaning of the word Tizrim in the pasuk? It means, Nakrinu Minoch Kizar. It means, keep it far away, keep it foreign to you, like a zar, like a strange person, like a strange person who doesn't belong there. And therefore, so keep it far away, like you would keep away a zar. So what is Rabba adding by that? So Tosfos explains, given that we're going to be discussing the question, soon of if you have different ways of learning what the degree of tumah of a Avodah Zarah is, at least according to Rabbi Akiva, why are we using a more chumradic one after all? Rabbi Akiva knows that it says in the pasuk also shaket to shaksenu. So why instead is he saying we have to compare it to a nida and be more machmir is based on this idea because the pasuk is telling you to keep Avodah Zarah as far away from you as possible, and therefore that implies that you should be machmir in dinim of Avodah Zarah as much as possible. So that's the relevance of what Rabbi is saying over here. Then he continues when it says, "Say Toimaloi." When the pasuk says you should, when the pasuk says, "Tell it to go out," meaning he conis al Toimaloi. Don't tell it to come in. You have to be very careful to stay away from Avodah Zarah. Now, what's the point of that? Obviously, if you have to tell it to go out, it means you're not allowed to bring it into your house. So there's a pirush called Bechor Shur from the Tavor Shur that has a very interesting explanation. He says like this. So we're saying, Rabbi Akiva is saying that you're comparing Avodah Zarah to a nida. And the Chachamim also agree that there's a certain comparison to a nida, which the Gemara is going to explain soon what the point of that comparison is. Now, we know that the din with nida as follows. We learned it here and there in the Gemara. What if a man is having relations with his wife, and then while they're having relations, she becomes a nida? So the din is he's not allowed to pull out right away because it's called osei hanola kibiyose. Pulling out when he still has a kishui is going to be just as pleasurable as going in. So that would be also, it's considered at that point that he's having relations in the nida. So he has to wait there. He has to balance himself on his toes and on his fingertips and toes until his kishui dies down, and then he's allowed to withdraw. So you see, in other words, that there's sort of a case where like you're expected to stay together with a nigga. So you would think maybe with Avodah Zarah also, you're comparing Avodah Zarah to a nigga, maybe there's a case where you're allowed to have the Avodah Zarah around, maybe let's say you need it for refuah or something. So therefore, Rabbi is stressing that no, say Tovaloi, he caught it, Tovaloi, there is no case where you're allowed to bring Avodah Zarah in. Even though you're comparing it to a nida, don't think it means that, like by the nida, you have that case where you're allowed to stay with it temporarily. You're not even allowed to do that. Okay. V'omer Rabba, and then Rabba continues. So what's the actual machloikas of Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim? V'master b'kula amul atugid imatama. When it comes to carrying Avodah Zarah, everybody would agree that it's matame the person by carrying it. just for Nida, because after all, there is the comparison to Nida. Even the Chachamim know, you have the pasuk that says, that Tizrin Kamajava, so therefore there has to be some comparison to Nida, and that comparison would be that if you carry the Avodah Zarah, you must hear something. He pligi the Evan Mesoma. The machlokus between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim would be where you have an Evan Mesoma involved. An Evan Mesoma is a heavy stone that, for example, is on top of pegs or on top of poles or something, so you don't have the weight. So you have, let's say, you have somebody sitting on top of a stone. If you have somebody sitting on top of such a stone, and underneath the pegs, underneath the stone, there are kalim, are those kalim becoming tummy? So now the weight. Now, if the weight of the nidah or zav or whatever was directly on top of the kalim, then for sure they become tummy. That's classic tumas midras. But here we're talking about where there's a stone in between, and therefore his weight is not resting on the talim at all. His weight is resting on the stone, and in turn on the pegs that are holding up the stone. So would those talim become tame or not? That's Rashi's explanation of Evan Masama. Tosis explains a little bit differently. It doesn't necessarily mean that the stone is actually held up by pegs. It just means really that there's not really, the stone is heavy enough that when you sit on it, there's no real noticeable weight on the, and there's no real noticeable extra weight on anything that's under the stone. So the question is, are those kalim metame? Rabbi Akiva sava kenida. Rabbi Akiva says there also you have that it's treated like a nida, and a nida would be metame things that are under an Evan Masama. So therefore it is like this also. If you have a Vadazara sitting on top of an Evan Masama, and then you have Kalim underneath that stone, then Rabbi Akiva would say that those Kalim are Matame. Because Man needed Matama the Evan Masama, half of Vadazara Matama the Evan Masama. So Vadazara would be Matame like Nida in that regard also. But Rabbanan Savi, where's the Rabbanan hold? No, in that regard, Kesheret, in that regard, Vadazara is like a Sheret. Ma sheriff by Matama, but Evan Masama, a sheriff is not Matame in that sense. If you have a sheriff on top of an Evan Masama, on top of this heavy stone, and you have Kalim underneath it, then the Kalim are not going to become Tame. So therefore, like this also, the Kalim don't become Tame either. So the Chachamim are going to say, fine, you have a hekish to Nida, you have also a hekish to Sheret, so therefore we're going to go according to the more lenient one, because after all, the whole din of Tumas Avodah Zarah is only Dirabbanan. Rabbi Akiva, meanwhile, is going to say, we just quoted before what Rabbi says, that Nakrinu Mimcha Kizar, keep it as far away from you as you would a stranger, so that's what Tosha says, that's Rabbi's point, is, why is Rabbi Akiva going to Chumrah and making the Hekesh throughout to Nida and not making the Hekesh to Sheretz at all, as we're going to see later, what Rabbi Akiva would even do with the Hekesh to Sheretz, because of this point that you have to be machmir with Avodah Zarah as much as possible. So the question is, Ol Rabbi Akiva l'may hilch to Ipkash l'Sheretz. Okay, so what is Rabbi Akiva doing with the Hekesh to a Sheretz? The answer is l'misham sheh. He would say, as far as the Meshamshe Avodah Zarah, that you have the Avodah Zarah itself, and then there are the things that are used to serve it. Now you have, there's actually three things. There's the Avodah Zarah itself, there's Meshamshe Avodah Zarah, Kalim, for example, that are used to serve the Avodah Zarah, and then you have also, there's a concept called Tikroibus Avodah Zarah, things that are actually offered to the Avodah Zarah, like food or water or what have you. So as far as Meshamshe Avodah Zarah, then we would say that then Rabbi Akiva would agree that those are Matame, like the Sheretz, only by touching them, not by carrying them, not by Evan Masama. Okay, Avodah Zarah itself would be Matame like a Nida. What about Ola Rabbanon Lamai Hilch to Itkash Nida? What about, according to the Rabbanon, they have the Hekesh with Nida. So according to them, why do we need the Hekesh to Nida? In other words, the point of the question is, if the Rabbanon are saying that it's Matame if you carry it, but not the Evan Masama, then instead of comparing it to a Nida, where then you would misunderstand and say that it means that it's Matame, the Evan Masama, you should instead compare it to a Nevela. A Nevela is exactly that. A Nevela is Matame when you carry it, but not with an Evan Masama. So therefore, so why are we comparing it to a nida davka? That's the question. The Gemara says, you want to say mamasa? It's teaching you that it is matame if you carry it. In that case, lo trachmana la nevela. The Torah should compare it to a nevela, which is exactly that. A nevela is matame a person who carries it, and is not matame with an eben mesama. So if the Rabbanan hold like that, that's matame b'masa, but not eben mesama, then it should be compared to a nevela. This is Enochanami. It's true. The Pasuk could have compared Abba Rezara to a nevela, but the reason why it mentioned Nida is to teach us a different thing. Ela man Nida Enol Eivorim. A Nida is not Matame limb by limb, meaning, let's say, for example, if a limb gets chopped off a Nida, so it has, it's Matame is Eivorim and Achai, as long as it has in its boss of the Gidim Ba'atomis, it has flesh and bones and Gidim, then it's Matame, then Matame is Eivorim and Achai. But it's not going to be Matame with any tumor of a Nida. Again, now obviously, as Avraham and Achai is going to be Matame, a person who touches it or carries it, the point is, though, that it's not going to be Matame with Evan Masama. So therefore, so that's the point. So we want to know, just like a Nida is like that, it's not Matame Le'Evarim. Abba Bedazara ain't a Le'Evarim, the same way Abba Bedazara is not Matame Le'Evarim. If an Abba Bedazara breaks apart, or let's say, for example, even you have, Rashi explains, let's say you have an Abba Bedazara that to begin with was made out of pieces that are meant to be attached together. So if one of those pieces is detached from it, then it's not Matame, it's Abba Dezara. So we're not talking about, again, where it broke off, because if it broke off, then that's different. Many times it's actually not even also as Abba Dezara anyway. But we're talking about, let's say, a piece that an Abba Dezara that's meant to be screwed together out of pieces, and one piece is unscrewed from it, so it's not Matame, just like a piece from a nigger would not be Matame. Would not be Matame.
Rabbi, if that's the case, then when a wall falls down between Eden and the guy, why would if the wall falls down? So why would the asher bar no whatever? Why would you be tummy if it's broke? It's broken up like the piece that's off the mezuzah.
So that was what Yaakov asked before. And the answer is there's a different. And the answer is that there's a difference. There's a difference between a wall First of all, there's the question also whether we're talking about a house over here, which is actually itself worshipped. If the house itself is just being used for a place of a Badazara, then you have a bigger question anyway, because why is it Matame? But the answer is that a wall to begin with is meant to be taken apart and put back together. It was made up of pieces to begin with, as opposed to the Sabadazara. Fine, it's made out of pieces, but once it's put together, it's usually meant to stay that way. But a wall
between two houses that falls down and costs so much money, that's not made to fall down. It's made to stay there, because when it falls down, no one wants that.
Every stone in it has an importance of its own, basically. To begin with, it's built out of separate stones, and every stone has a chashivus of its own. As opposed to, let's say, an Abba Dezara that's made out of pieces that are nailed or screwed together, each piece doesn't really have a chashivus of its own. So that's the idea. In other words, so the Rabbanon would say that the Hefesh to Nida is meant to teach us a Kula. So in other words, yes, if it was just to teach us that it's Matambe the Master but not the Evan the Summer, then it would have compared it to a Nevela. But a Nevela, after all, a piece of a Nevela is also Matame. So in order to tell us not, it compares it to a Nigga, that a Nigga is not Matame Levar. Okay, the question with that is, the Ela Hodaboy of Homabaguya, what about though, if you're going to say that, that an Avodah Zarah is not Matame Le'Evarim, we actually find later on in the Sugya where Rav Chama Bar Guria asks just that question. Avodah Zarah Yeshna Le'Evarim or Yena Le'Evarim? Is an Avodah Zarah Matame even only a piece of it, that comes off it, is Matame or not? So Tipshet Le'Mehar, Dilla Rabbanon Eina Le'Evarim. Well, there you have it. We're just saying over here that according to the Rabbanon, it wouldn't be Matame Le'Evarim. So what's his question? The answer is, Rav Chama Bar Guria would be asking this question according to Rav Akiva. According to Rav Akiva, who holds that the Hekesh Kenida goes throughout, and it means that the Avodah Zarah is in the time of the Evan Mesama, so according to him, it's completely like the Tumah of Nida, so therefore, would he say that it's also like Nida Lakula, that it's not Matama Le'Evarim, or would he say that he uses the Hekesh only Lachumra and not Lakula? Okay. Okay, so that's all. So that's all one. That's all one way of understanding the machlokes of Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim. That everybody would agree. That everybody would agree that it's metame. That it's metame b'masa, and you would have the machlokes whether it's metame b'evan m'sama. Now we're gonna have another way of understanding the machlokes. But we'll leave that for tomorrow, Rabbi Hashem.
Yes, Shikoyach.
Yeah.
A wonderful day.